Luke has a savagery about him and anger that's deep. Janet, you've got to do something. Just look in his eyes. He's in pain all the time. All the time. It's the COI Podcast. Hello from Brooklyn. I'm Sergey Burbank, Coordinating Director of Conflict of Interest Theater Company. The COI Podcast combines a love of literature with a love of performance, and in this episode, we present the short work, Janet and Keith, by Wendy Merrick Burbank. People who claim to be from real mountains laugh when we call these mountains. They are, nevertheless, mountains, with a real name, the Helderbergs. They're the northern foothills of the Catskills, about 1,500 feet above mean sea level, and the Hudson and Mohawk rivers. High enough to host a microclimate and a microculture. We arrived late in the summer of 1980 and hibernated, as strangers, through a harsh winter. When spring came, Janet was sitting at my kitchen table drinking coffee, welcoming half of the couple who had bought from her father and grandfather these odd, whimsical buildings built in the very early 1900s perched above the creek. By this time, she would have heard about the difference in our ages, that we looked eccentric, that we weren't actually married. And that would have satisfied what little curiosity she had about us. Janet's own life was too full for her to catalog more than slivers of the biographies of the people around her. Janet was a walking, talking, open book. I would know most of her story when this visit was over. She was the middle child of three sisters. She was the only sister who was willing to take care of her grandparents, Everett and Elsie. She was the only sister who loved their old house, which was, and still is, a massive, squat, 1910 craftsman bungalow. The others didn't like anything old. Everything had to be new. They didn't even like old people. Janet loved old things and old people. Janet's husband, Jerry, had walked out on her and their son many times. He always returned in a few weeks or months, and she always took him back. "I always take him back," she said, her voice hollow and complacent, and in the present tense, as if life would ever be thus. There was a philosophic detachment in her tone, as though she were talking about someone else's life altogether, and underneath that, a layer of sorrow. Jerry was bipolar and would forget to take his medication. He wasn't completely to blame for running off, and just once, for trying to choke her. Only that one time, and he didn't mean it. It was a real bad day. Janet's son, Luke, got into fights at school. His principal, who grew up with Janet, told her, "Luke has a savagery about him and anger that's deep. Janet, you've got to do something. Just look in his eyes. He's in pain all the time. All the time." She didn't know what to do. She stared at the still surface of her coffee and coughed. Janet's skin and teeth, even the whites of her eyes, all looked slightly glaucous to me. Her long, dark, center-parted, broad, straight hair was oily and flaccid. It looked like she was going for the early Cher look, the Cher of the TV variety show and the Bob Mackie mermaid gowns, the Cher with the sunny shadow. Janet's clothes were skin-tight, revealing a flat-chested, flat-assed, bone-thin body. From somewhere in the middle of her story, with no warning I could track, came the stunning utterance, "I like my sex straightforward. It's just the way I've always been." That was when I started worrying about Janet, the afternoon I met her. While she talked, maundering from one subject to another, from how she liked her sex to being allergic to cat fur, I wondered what she ate, and whether Jerry ever said goodbye or hello by hitting her or Luke. In the winter of 81-82, Everett and Elsie, who were in their 90s, grew ill. One day, when Jerry was gone again, Janet and Luke moved in with them. Everett was the first to go. For the next year, Elsie, who was a diminutive woman to begin with, seemed to get smaller and smaller. Janet was afraid to leave her alone for fear she'd vanish into the house's nether zones. She might slip between the floorboards or into the plumbing. After Elsie died in the spring of 83, Janet and her family stayed in the house. It was old, so no one else wanted it. She was the only one with eyes to see the rituals and faces in the architecture. Jerry was getting worse and disappearing more often. Our next-door neighbor, Keith, had the same disorder. Unlike Jerry, Keith was ever-present, always there to help with projects or to talk excitedly and endlessly about what we all should do next, or about the meaning of life. He was an artist who worked in leaded glass, a 6'4", 34-year-old child with a high and generous spirit whose hair and eyes were both the unlikely color of beech leaves in winter. When he was manic, he got around, and his family hid. He came to talk to me one day after a long hospital stay. He said they tinkered with his polarity, and they think they got it right this time. The next week, he shot himself in the head. We all missed Keith when he checked out suddenly like that. Janet panicked and paid closer attention to Jerry's chemical regulation. No one could talk to Keith's family, they burrowed deeper, and we wondered, how did Keith find his bullet? Is every single moment a chance to get or lose something, and we don't know it? The moment before the moment of Keith's bullet was his last chance to stay in the body. But how could he have known that when he didn't live in his body? His body lived alongside him, its alchemy under a variant and fickle governance. Keith's essence, the self who tortured and freed him, and Keith's body were in separate searches for the elixir of life. Camus said, "I have never seen anyone die for the ontological argument." Well, I have. If Keith didn't die over the question of being, then I don't know what on earth else it could have been over. Wendy Merrick Burbank lives in the Helderberg Mountains in upstate New York. Her work appeared in several issues of the electronic journal Fed1A, a digital display of ideas and information. She has been a featured writer in events sponsored by the Catskill Mountain Foundation Center for Literary Arts and the Hudson Valley Writers Guild. Janet and Keith, by Wendy Merrick Burbank, is used with permission. The CUI podcast is made possible through the generosity of donors to Conflict of Interest Theater Company. It's available streaming on the web at conflicttheater.podomatic.com. You can also find us by searching for the CUI podcast in the iTunes podcast directory. Read our blog at conflicttheater.blogspot.com. If you find yourself in the New York City area, year-round or specifically this summer, come see our June premiere of War Crimes, one of many excellent shows participating in the Planet Connections Theater Festivity. For more information on the company and its productions, visit us on the web at coitc.org. Graphic design is by Eunice Inquimboy. Legal advice, Paul Renitz. Special thanks to Anne Galloway, Jennifer Rathbone, Eileen Trilly, Jason Updike, and Sam Van Halgren. Questions, comments, and submissions can be sent to conflictinfo@gmail.com.